Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. Before we get to my guest this week, had a lovely weekend, worked and also enjoyed myself a lobster salad roll, cold lobster salad roll. Very nice, you know, buttery toasted bun. Lobster roll was $27. What kind of a highfalutin lobster was this? Did it win like a gold medal in the Lobster Olympics? Does it have a doctorate from Oxford? With $27. This took me six bites. So it was like $5 a bite. It was the most painful lunch I ever had. Okay, my guest this week is esteemed political advisor and analyst, David Gergen. He's been an advisor to four U.S. presidents, both Democrats and Republicans. I've had him on before. He's brilliant. He calls him as he sees him. He's got a great book out on leadership. And we have a really interesting conversation about the research he did. And the book is really practical because it's entertaining. It's great history because he talks about the different, you know, the great leaders in history and why they were great. And it's also educational, and you can apply it in your own life on how to be a better leader. If you want to lead, like, say, you want to lead a small seafood shack that charges people $27 for lobster rolls. You know, you might want to have good leadership skills there as you're scamming the public. But I hope you enjoy this. David Gergen is someone who's very special on the political landscape and always has been. So enjoy David Gergen. Here he comes. Hi, folks. Welcome to the show this week. Very honored to have an important voice in our country. Politically and otherwise, he's an advisor to four U.S. presidents, both Republicans and Democrat, senior political analyst for CNN, and founder of the Center for Public Leadership at the Harvard Kennedy School. It is David Gergen, and he has a new book out, Hearts Touched with Fire, How Great Leaders Are Made. David, so nice to have you on the show.
Thanks, Paul. It's an honor to be here.
Well, more of an honor for me. I think you made a mistake being on my show. I'm like, how did this guy get on my show? This is crazy. No, I'm just kidding. So this book is really fascinating.
You're the creator. You're a creative guy. I like talking to you.
Yeah. Well, I've followed you for years because you've always been the sane voice, the reasonable voice. And we need more voices like you, especially now. And this book couldn't be more timely. And I know you've sort of tracked the paths of some amazing people: Ruth Bader Ginsburg, John Lewis, John McCain, Harvey Milk, the Black Lives Matter movement, in writing this book. And in the book, you say leadership is a journey that starts from within. A leader must become self-aware and then achieve self-mastery. You cannot lead others until you can lead yourself. I never thought of that way, but it seems right. How does one do that, and why is that so important that you have to sort of achieve self-mastery?
Well, I think history shows us how important it is to become aware of who you are and to try to develop a set of values and principles by which you want to be guided in your life, to have a North Star, in effect. And I think I came to Washington early on to in a military uniform, but then when I went to work and for Richard Nixon in the White House, when I first got there, I was quite impressed with how good a strategist he was. I thought he was the best strategist I've ever met in public life, with the possible exception of Henry Kissinger, and they worked together. But, you know, he had the foresight to try to break apart the China from Russia, and that really and we succeeded to that, and that was a major part of what he got done in life. So if that had been all he did, he would still have been one of our better presidents. But the truth is, he also had personal demons inside him that he had not learned to control. He had an anger and a sense of grievance, and he if you weren't for him, he felt if you weren't for him, you must be an enemy. And he had a list of enemies. He had an enemies list that included journalists as well as politicians. And he tapped phones and, you know, did a lot of things like that. And what that and eventually he fell. His demons conquered him. When David Frost came to interview him and ask him, Mr. President, what happened? And he said, and Nixon said, I gave my enemies a sword, and then they ran me through. And that's exactly what happened. He was the author of his own downfall.
Right.
And that came because he wasn't well anchored as a person. He didn't have his value set. He was lashing out one way or another. And a man who had all that promise, you know, was forced out of office. So it really reinforced for me the importance of, you know, the leadership does start with a journey, and you have to understand yourself, and you've got to get self-mastery. By the way, there's an inner journey and there's an outer journey. The outer journey is learning how to, you know, how to manage up, how to lead from below, because you start out as a junior person in most organizations. But then you learn how to build a small team and then a bigger team. And then you learn how to work with people outside your team, you know, work across to people in different industries or different fields. And you learn how to collaborate, which is so important to leadership today. So it's a long journey, and people, you got to have a lot of perseverance, and you got to deal with the fact that the higher up you get, the more people are going to take shots at you, and they'll try to destroy you, and you got to work your way through it. And people get banged around a lot, but at the end of the day, the John McCain's and the Ruth Bader Ginsburg's, and a lot of the women, the black women of our time who started the Me Too movement or started Black Lives Matter, their politics are more to the left than mine are. But nonetheless, I celebrate them for getting in the arena, getting banged around, but standing up for what they believe in order to get change. And that you have to admire people to do that.
Absolutely. You know, when you talk about self-mastery and you use Nixon as an example, and a lot of these people that you've researched and are the basis for this book.
Yes.
And inherent in the idea of self-mastery to me is humility. And there's this balancing act that has to happen between striving. Look, let's just talk about presidents. Oh, I don't know. I have an aspiration to be the leader of the free world. You got to have a pretty big ego in a way to have that, but it's the goal. And at the same time, have the humility that you need to be, to exercise self-discipline and not let your demons get the better of you like Nixon. Who do you think in your research, and over the years in politics and dealing with leaders and advising them, was particularly good at the balancing act of humility and, leading with ego and strength?
Well, you make a very, very good point, and that is frankly, the temptation is the higher up you go, the greater the temptation is to lose your humility. And to think of yourself, I'm different. I'm above the rules. I don't have to play by the rules. I can, I can get away with it. I can walk on the edge. If I fall off, I'll be able to talk my way back up. This has faced civilization since the ancient days of Rome and Greece. You know, there was a practice in Rome, and I'll be brief. There was a practice in Rome that when a victorious general came back from the wars, there would be a great parade through the streets of Rome in honor of the general. What the Romans did is they posted a person up to a young guy to the ear of the general, who would whisper into his ear every few blocks, "Remember that you are human. Remember that you have flaws. Remember that you are mortal." It was really important to instill in these generals, even as they had just won, to instill a sense of humility. Among recent presidents, I would say Jerry Ford obviously was a humble man. He never envisioned being president. It was an accidental president. I thought he did a pretty damn good job considering what he went through. But I also think that very importantly, I thought Ronald Reagan kept his ego under control. One of the important things about Reagan was he didn't need the job to feel that he had had a good life. He didn't need to be president. And you contrast that with some people who are just driven to get to the top because they want to prove something. They tend to be not very good leaders, because it becomes about them and not about the work.
How balancing instincts and intellect seem to be an important attribute in a good leader. In writing the book, what did you find in that regard? Who was particularly good at that? If anything, what have you learned in terms of learning from others, from leaders, when to let your instincts lead you and not?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a combination of instincts and self-reflection, and some understanding of human nature. And you get that understanding of human nature by reading. It's important to do that because there's a lot to be learned from biographies and history. I once went out to the Truman Library, Harry Truman's library, which I love because it was so modest. But I found a speech that he gave to high school students who came through regularly in Independence. And Truman said, not every reader is a leader, but every leader is a reader. And I believe that to be true. There's a best example of modern day America is General Jim Mattis, who was 4-star and worked as a defense secretary under Trump. First class guy, first class military officer, but he's a voracious reader. And when he changed billets and he brought his library with him, he had 7,000 books, 7,000 books. So he read all the time. And you find that Teddy Roosevelt, when he was in the White House, he used to read a book a day, to get through it. And the guy, Orrin Wister, who wrote one of the first Westerns, he came to the White House to see his friend Teddy Roosevelt, and late in the afternoon gave him his latest book, The Virginian, which became a classic. And the next morning at breakfast, TR had read the whole book, wanted to talk about it.
Wow.
You know, there are some people like that who just have that capacity, and I think it enlarges them. It gives them a greater sense of, and by the way, it teaches humility. Because you realize that, you know, all of us are flawed. All of us have our secrets.
Right.
And been wrestling. We have our demons. But you just got to learn to wrestle them to the ground.
Yeah. What did you find in terms of social media's impact on the ability to be effective leader now versus the 60s, 70s, 80s, and how that alters how one has to approach being an effective leader?
Yeah. Well, it's a very good question. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, I think it's much easier to get a profile, a public profile today, because you can go on social media and look at AOC, you know, coming from a bartender to national prominence, and national leadership. And I didn't agree with all her politics, but I do admire what as she lifted herself up, but it became evident that social media does give a lot of people who might have been shut out by the establishment, it gives them a chance to exercise a voice,
right?
And that's a positive thing. So there's a good side, but the social media is a two-edged sword, as so many technologies are, and that is there's a good side to it, but there's also what we're learning now with Elon Musk and others. There's some bad sides to it, and it's a place where a lot of disinformation is being spewed out now, and a lot of Americans can't figure out who's telling the truth anymore. And what you find is a substantial number of people have now jumped on the Trump bandwagon and believe that he was wrong, that Joe Biden was an illegitimate president,
right?
And 30% of the people in the country believe that now, and makes a huge difference in the capacity to govern. When you're seen as illegitimate, people say, screw you. We're not listening to you. We don't believe you, and so forth. And social media has been, I think all of us would like to see social media tamed a little bit find some ways that we can, who are we going to trust? I don't think we can get the government to run it. I hope we don't have the government try to figure out who's telling the truth on the internet. I think that would invite all sorts of political problems that would not like to. I think the country's going to struggle with this for a while, and hopefully there will be some media outlets that will become known for being trustworthy. You know, right now Americans are having a hard time finding organizations that they feel are trustworthy.
Yeah, and objective. And I think too that the problem with social media is it can create instant leaders, but that doesn't mean that they're ready to be leaders if they don't have the life you talk about. And
yeah, they also, you know, what you find is that they can go up very fast. You can go up very fast, but then when you get to the top, it's really hard to govern, as AOC is discovered.
Yeah.
And it's also true, you can slip very quickly. You can go down fast. You know, so it's a It's very different, isn't it, from anything we've seen before?
Oh, it's a game changer on a lot of levels, and for me in the entertainment business too. You know, it's a presence that I have to have, whether I want it or not. And I just want to say, for the record, David Gergen, if I see you on TikTok doing any dancing or singing, I'm going to be very upset with you. I know how you can get. You get a little crazy with your TikTok there. I don't want you going nuts there. You're
I don't think you're that's a big danger. At 80 years old, I ain't dancing much.
One of the questions about leadership is whether it really matters. The so-called great man theory of leadership has been heavily discredited. Do we still need great leaders?
Yeah, no, you know, I think there is a question. To me, the evidence is clear that leaders matter. I mean, just look at Ukraine and Zelensky coming out of nowhere, basically coming out of the entertainment world and doing this wonderful job he's doing. So it's true. But there's a wonderful story that Arthur Schlesinger Jr., the historian, used to tell about in the 1930s, a British politician came to American shores, and he was in New York giving a speech, and he was British, and he got out of a cab on the wrong side of the road on Park Avenue and was struck down by another cab and nearly died. And then 14 months later, there was an American political figure who was in Miami in an open car, and a gunman came and fired at point blank range. And had it not been for a woman who jarred the gunman's arm, he would have killed the young American politician. So Schlesinger's question was this: what if that young British politician in New York who went down, was struck down, Winston Churchill, had died that night? What if that American politician sitting in that open car in Miami, Franklin Roosevelt, had died that day in Miami? How would history have been any different? And I think people look at that and they say, well, obviously, the alternatives to Churchill and Britain were just not up to the job. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, the incoming vice president in America wasn't up to the job. And it just goes to prove that, you know, that leadership is indispensable to doing great things.
Right. Absolutely. So the book is fascinating. It is A Heart's Touch with Fire, How Great Leaders Are Made. And it's a real honor to have you on. A terrific read. And best of luck with the book. And hopefully we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much.
All right. That's David Gergen. Really great book. Highly recommend it. Check it out. Thanks for checking out the podcast, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week.